Welcome back to Start, Kyle Orton. I'm Travis. With me, as always, is Kyle. And Kyle, we got fucking fire, man.
We got fucking fire. I know. So we missed last week. Sorry about that, guys. I'm going to own that one. That one's not on Travis. Just had a hellacious week and some stuff got in the way. But that's good in a way because here we are with a fucking double dose of joy.
Yeah.
For the Scott, this is going to be the happiest goddamn Scottcast that you people have ever experienced in your fucking lives. Because we have not one, but two Bears wins to discuss since the last time we recorded. And Travis, last time we recorded, it was the doldrums of right after the Colts lost. Bears Twitter, Bears Reddit. The Bears internet, the inter Bears, the dark bear web. No, wait, that's a different thing. I've been on there.
Don't type that into Google. Do not type dark bear web into Google.
Don't be doing that. Unless you have some really good malware protection.
You'll find all Kyle's old pictures.
Anyways, no, but the Bears world was isn't a dark fucking place, man. Like over the loss to the Colts, and here you and I, and I don't think we're the Pollyannas of the Bears world. I don't think I'd like to think if anything, we're known for telling it like it is.
Yeah.
But we were like, you know, guys, take a step back, because I saw Caleb Williams do some shit in that.
We thought it looked pretty good.
We saw some shit happening.
Yeah.
And we said, you know, that this train might still be on the tracks. And here we are 2 weeks later, two wins later. And now everybody's going to say, the motherfucking Panthers. That's fine. We'll get to the Panthers here in a minute. And you know what? The Rams are not playing with a full roster right now. But that is always one of the best coached teams in football. It was funny. I was told last week by Green Bay fans that the Rams defense is a joke, that they were playing all backups, that it is not impressive to eke out a 24 points against that particular unit and eke out a one score win. Yesterday, I was in fact informed by those same Packers fans that the Rams are very well coached, that no one's better than Sean McVay, that this is a scrappy team, and winning over them is in fact something that you can write home about. So it was an interesting turn of events there. But yeah, I mean, the Rams game, you know, I think we all would have liked to see that second half momentum against Indianapolis just pick right up in that Rams game. But we that first quarter was rough. Felt like Shane Waldron again. I was a little worried during that Rams game because it looked that early game plan against the Rams felt to me like Matt Eberflus looked at that Colts loss and he didn't take the same stuff from it that you and I did. He didn't say Caleb's close. He said Caleb committed three turnovers and that's why we lost the game. So we need to not do that. And that's what that early on against the Rams, it really felt like. It felt like there was an ease him into the game plan. A lot of those goddamn screens trying to run the ball. But there were some timely turnovers. There was a quality 2 minute drill in there. And then in the second half against the Rams, we saw Caleb just dominating in quick game, dominating against the blitz. They did a little tempo, And they finally got the run game on track. DeAndre Swift had a nice long run. So we really saw some very nice things in the second half against the Rams. The Bears managed to put some points on the board. And obviously a great defensive effort, great way to close that out. It was really encouraging to see the way the defensive line has chewed up and spit out these last two offensive lines that they've faced. Watching the Rams, you know, we used to have such a pure hate for Matt Stafford. Remember when he was like a fat-faced frat boy in Detroit?
Yeah.
Remember him fighting with the original DJ Moore after he threw an interception in 2011, and we were like, Matthew Stafford's a bitch. You know, Matthew Stafford's spoiled frat boy. But, man, is there any quarterback that you respect more right now than Matthew Stafford?
It was specifically because he took the L to the Bears. No, I'm down on Matt Stafford now because he couldn't finish the job against
Green Bay. That's true. We hate him again.
We hate him again. What use are you, Matt?
I do have so much respect for that guy, the way he and McVay are holding that Rams offense together with just like spit and baling wire. And yeah. I mean, he took some shots in that game against the Bears. He was getting, I mean, it should have been roughing on the game. Interception, like he took a clear Daryl Taylor got around the right tackle in about 0.4 seconds, and Stafford, you know, was de-cleated. And he was taking some 2005 ass hits out there, like he was taking some like freaking jacked up segment hits against them, and he just kept popping up and firing piss missiles. It wasn't enough, fortunately, but yeah, I mean, that was a good, solid win. The offensive explosion wasn't quite what everyone was hoping there, but, you know, the road goes on and on. We got into the Panthers game. But before we get into the Panthers game, what do you want to say about the Rams game, Travis?
Yeah, I mean, it was, I think, well, what was I preaching here 2 weeks ago? Mostly patience with Shane Waldron, right? Like, I was a bit frustrated by the Bears fan base to turn on an offensive coordinator so quickly, for doing what we had called for with Mitch Trubisky, with Justin Fields. We just kept saying, oh, the offense has failed them. The head coach has failed them. You know, all these coordinators have failed them because they aren't developing them like they should, a rookie quarterback. And here's a guy who's been trying to build Caleb up the right way, even if it doesn't give you immediate returns. And we kind of shit on the guy. We went into that Rams game. And again, he was very set, like, this is what we are going to do to put Caleb in a position to succeed long term. And I do appreciate that. But yeah, that was a slow start. And I do wonder, there was this moment there. Really, the Bears started to get going with that last drive right before the second half. They had this fantastic drive where Caleb is like playing the quick game, getting everybody up there in no huddle, running the offense, calling the plays, setting protections as quick as he can. And it was the best drive the Bears had maybe all season. And from that point on, and now we can say this with certainty after seeing the Panthers game, Waldron has kind of turned over the keys to the car and been like, look, at this point, I don't need to help him anymore. He just needs to run the offense. And we'll talk about it in the Panthers game. He's trying to get him reps, even in situations where I think like all past Bears coaches would have said, sit down, kid, and hand the ball off. Like at this point, he's just like, get out there, get experience. So, like, I have nothing left to coddle you about, right?
Yeah, the trust that they... So, I mean, you know, I was watching the Steelers game last night, you know, and a lot of people have made a big deal out of, you know, Justin Fields.
You stayed up late.
Justin Fields looks so much better in Pittsburgh, and Justin Fields was quick to say, well, the coaching in Pittsburgh's better, blah, blah, blah. And I was saying, even before last night, I was like, yeah, but if you look at the numbers, like, he really isn't doing that differently. Like the yards per game, the yards per attempt, all of that was very similar. The one thing that he was doing is he was throwing it a lot shorter on average, which, you know, led to fewer sacks and a lower time to throw, but he was also getting a lower yards per attempt and a lower, you know, explosives and all that, blah, blah, blah. But, you know, I was watching the Steelers game, and the Steelers had a 3rd and 8. They were inside the Cowboys 40. I don't remember exactly what yard line they were on, but it was 3rd and 8. They were in, you know, not quite the red zone, but in that area where you're looking to move into the red zone. And this is a Dallas defense that has struggled all year, and they were missing Micah Parsons. They're missing DeMarcus Lawrence. They lost Marshawn Nealon, who was DE4 for them early in the game. They were rotating some linebackers in at edge. That's how thin, and they were out 2 starting corners, blah, blah, blah. So not the best defense in the world. And Mike Tomlin, who I do think is a fantastic coach, better than what Chicago's got. Yeah, Mike Tomlin is a fantastic coach. And what did he do with Justin Fields on that 3rd and 8? They ran the ball. They handed the ball off. And, you know, that was a frustration people had with the two different coaching staffs with Justin Fields. It was very much like, why don't they trust him to throw the ball? Why are we running the ball in these situations? You know, and when you have all of these different coach, you know, and of course with Justin, the lesson a lot of people should have taken from that is, you know, how many times was he placed in a true drop back situation? He took a bad sack, took them out of scoring range, fumbled, blah, blah, blah. Like, coaches are wrong sometimes, but the level of trust, and it goes back to Mitch Trubisky too. Mitch Trubisky and Matt Nagy got caught in this, you know, Ouroboros, where it was like Mitch fucks up Nagy's complicated game plan, so Nagy makes the game plan even more simple so that Mitch can understand it, but then they can't score any points because the game plan is so simple that the defense knows exactly what play is coming 90% of the time. So then the fans are like, why don't they trust him to run more stuff? So then they widen the playbook again, and then Mitch fucks it up, and so Nagy pairs it back down again. You know, we've been through this with the last two first round quarterbacks and the last three coaching staffs, where you're like, why won't they just let the kid throw the ball? Why don't they just trust him? And you're seeing with Caleb Williams, they trust him. They are letting him run no huddle. They're letting him run tempo. I mean, I think we both would cite this that drive to start the second half against the Panthers yesterday. They're up 27-7.
Yep.
They have the ball. We know for a fact how many Bears coaches, how many Bears quarterbacks would have been told at that point already at 27-7, time to turtle, time to protect this lead. We're going to run the damn ball. We are not going to put it up. They let Caleb go no huddle, tempo, fucking empty up and down the field. It wasn't even like just regular ass. No, he was running empty up and down, you know, with an offensive line that has struggled a little bit because they were smart about it for once. And they were like, look, we're up 20 points. If the kid throws an interception on this drive, fine. Then the next drive is when you just turtle and you hand off the ball and try to get it. But like, we're up 20 points. When are you going to get a better chance to give this kid live NFL game reps that are low risk, where you can rep some of this empty stuff that we haven't really run yet? Because, you know, there's risk to running empty, and there is risk to running no huddle and just letting Caleb wing it. And Caleb drove them all the way down to the 1 yard line. And then some really
scored a touchdown twice, and neither of them counted. And then we got a field goal somehow.
That red zone sequence was so funny because he had those two long ass scrambles, and then he fell down in the end zone. And then that next pass that he actually threw to DJ, I think it was a slant to DJ, was just 4 yards short because you could tell he was just completely gassed.
Yeah, he had nothing left. He was dead on the field. Like, I already scored twice. Like, I don't know what to do, guys.
But that was, you know, we have been critical of Matt Eberflus. We have been critical of Matt Eberflus for fitting too often into the Lovie Smith mold, into the Dave Wannstedt mold, into the Dick Duron mold, where, you know, we've seen this guy before, where, you know, he tries not to lose games rather than tries to win them. And that was a place where they were smart about, like, okay, what is the smartest thing that we can do that will help the Chicago Bears going forward with this time that we have? And it's letting our quarterback rep things live, so that when the next time you need to go no huddle, empty, because you've got a minute 30 left and you're playing the Packers, he's got some reps on that. He's got some experience there. Yeah. And so that was that kind of forward thinking. We have to give Matt Eberflus a little credit for that, because it's not been frequent around here, but when we see it, we got to call it out. Like, that was, to me, and Waldron trusted him to do that. And Caleb executed. That's the most important thing. Caleb didn't give them any reason not to trust him. Each week, he has been able to handle a little bit more, and he's shown them that, like, what was the stat that PFF tweeted out? He's the last 2 weeks, he is 15 of 17 for 200 yards and two touchdowns against the blitz.
And zero turnover-worthy plays.
Zero turnover-worthy plays, yeah.
And this is one thing. The other thing you've got to say about Flus, when he gave those comments about, you know, you can't put the ball in harm's way, we win that game if you don't, you know, throw those interceptions against the Colts.
If you honor the football.
That's right. And
honor the... Do you remember when
we Mark Trestman... We looked at it, and we were like, this guy... He's, you know, God damn it. You're going to turn Caleb into a blunt weapon, because he's just not going to do shit. You just don't want him to turn the ball over. He's going to be a game manager. Like, how dare you ask this of him? But if you look at it from the perspective of how they've been trying to build Caleb, it's a walk before you run kind of thing, right? Not a run before you walk type of deal. Okay, now you've got a game where you didn't turn the ball over. You had zero turnover worthy plays overall against the Rams. I keep wanting to call them St. Louis. It doesn't get out of my mouth. But then against the Panthers, they're like, all right, now just take that and turn the volume up a couple notches, right? Don't put the ball in harm's way, but take those chances. Be confident in yourself. And that's where we're seeing these big passes to Kmet, to Moore, like even taking a chance to Keenan Allen over the middle of the field on a pass which was kind of close, but it was either going to be caught by Keenan or it was going to hit the ground, right? Like,
I mean, he was throwing some fucking darts. And the touchdown right before the half to DJ Moore. I mean, we talked about, he looks off the safety.
Yeah.
He holds the safety. He fires it to DJ. It's a perfect ball placement. And we talked about this with him. He just has such an effortless release. Like, it's so compact, and it looks like it takes him no effort at all. And he fired it out there.
You could see it. The other thing, I mean, on that specific play, if we're already on it, is just DJ Moore. He's running. He is running his ass off on every play now, right? He realized that he missed a couple touchdowns.
Let's talk about that, because we did miss that. That was a controversy coming out of the Rams game. People were very critical of DJ Moore. JT O'Sullivan, you know, does quarterback school. He's been pretty critical of DJ Moore here. And I think it was, first rule of this podcast, we fucking hate questioning guys' characters. We hate questioning guys' effort, et cetera, blah, blah, blah. It's generally meatball shit. And with DJ, too, I don't think it was like an effort thing exactly much as just he has, his whole career, he has played with terrible quarterbacks in Carolina, and he played with Justin Fields, who is a one-read quarterback. I think it's been enough we can say, like, that's what Justin is, one-read, check-down, scramble. And I think this is the first time in his career he's been like, oh, shit, I'm not the primary option on this passing play, but I might still get the ball. Right. So I got to stay alert. Like, it's, you know, he – and a lot of it's true is that what people think looks like low effort, there are plays where he's absolutely being used as a decoy, as a clear. You know, there are plays where it's truly not designed for him to get the ball whatsoever. And, you know, as long as he's doing his job and taking the defender out of the play, you guys really don't need to – these guys do actually need to conserve energy sometimes. But, yeah, you see him when they were running plays that had 3-4 different concepts, different options for Caleb. He was busting his ass because he was like, I might, you know, you're seeing Caleb progress. You know, DJ was on the backside of that pass play. I think he was the third option. And you see Caleb progress. And it's like, okay, you know, you might be the third read, but the ball might still be coming to you. So that was good to see. You know, I didn't want to get into DJ. I'm kind of almost glad we didn't have to discuss that last week. I don't want to get into DJ Moore body language bullshit. Well, I have lived through the Jay Cutler era. I am done playing body language analyst. DJ, it was good to see them connect. It was good to see that connection finally click. Obviously, you know, there's a lot of panic about Caleb and the deep ball inaccuracy that he's showing. I didn't even with the ones he hit yesterday, he's still been below average in terms of deep ball accuracy. So I guess what I would say to that, too, to folks who have been concerned about that, one, deep ball accuracy is, you have to remember, if a guy's only hitting 25% of his deep passing attempts, while that may sound horrible, you have to realize that like a good completion percentage on those is 40%. So it's not like he's hitting 25% and most people are hitting 60. He's hitting 25, and the difference is about one or two missed deep balls per game there. It's a volatile passing stat anyways. I mean, Patrick Mahomes, we all know Patrick Mahomes is a fantastic deep thrower. His deep completion percentage last year was only 31%, because it's also a wide receiver stat. It's also how much are guys getting open downfield stat. It's volatile year to year, and it's especially volatile for rookies. It tends to, Joe Burrow was one of the best deep passers ever his last year at LSU. He's been an amazing deep ball thrower every other year of his NFL career for the most part. But as a rookie, everyone was asking the same thing about Joe Burrow. They were like, where's the deep ball that we saw at LSU? And it's because deep passing in the NFL is, you know, Caleb's talked about this too. You have to adjust to the fact that the hash marks and the spacing is totally different in the NFL. It changes how close to the sideline guys are, closes up the windows a little bit somewhat. It's a timing, it's a communication thing. I mean, you see with Aaron Rodgers and Garrett Wilson in that game in London yesterday. I mean, Garrett Wilson's a fantastic player. Aaron Rodgers, I don't think, is completely washed. And those two cannot connect on a deep ball right now to save their lives, because when Rodgers is expecting Wilson to do the back shoulder. Wilson's running the go ball. And when they're, you know, there's just so many different ways that that can go wrong. So I didn't want people to overreact to that small sample size. And obviously right now nobody is, because he hit a couple yesterday. But yeah, DJ Moore's effort is fine. I think he learned a life lesson there that, like, it's not death now to be the secondary read in this offense. And also, you know, deep ball weirdness happens and is probably going to still happen from time to time this season.
Yeah, I think part of that concern is Jaden Daniels is primarily hitting deep balls right now. Like, it's either instant short throws, like the ball is snapped, it touches his hands, it's out.
Yeah.
Or he's throwing deep balls, and they are hitting. They're being very accurate. But kind of like you said, the Bears... I keep trying like not to shit on this, but the Bears are running an NFL offense. Jaden Daniels, that's the play. The play that is being run is hit that deep ball to this guy. He's not making a read. He's not. That is what he's doing on that play, and it's easier to hit that when that's all you're doing.
Yeah, the Commanders' offense has been 100% built to maximize the skill set that Jaden Daniels entered the NFL with. And that's what's really funny. People have, you know, obviously Commanders fans, and I don't blame them. I mean, talk your shit, guys. Go for it. I can take it. I'm not worried about it.
I mean, congratulations to the fucking Commies right now.
Yeah, I mean, he's doing incredible things. Like, no doubt about it. But when people are like, well, you were dead ass wrong about Jaden Daniels, the stuff that I said is mostly still bearing out. He's only like 22nd. As I said, he doesn't go deep as often as it felt like in the NFL or in college. He just had a lot of success last year with those two great wide receivers. And this year he's only like 22nd in the NFL in terms of deep passing attempts. He's not going deep that often, but he's hitting them when they're there.
Yep.
And I said, he doesn't like to throw over the middle of the field. He's like bottom five right now in terms of passing attempts that go in between the hash marks. Everything is quick and outside the numbers for him still, for the most part. I said his first response to pressure is to drop his eyes and run. And right now he is scrambling on 37% of his pressure dropbacks. That is the most of any rookie QB with at least 50 pressures by far since they started tracking that. The next closest was Josh Allen as a rookie, and it was 18%. He's almost 20% higher than the next highest guy. And rookie Josh Allen had no idea what the fuck he was doing. And he's on pace for the most scrambles of all time. He's on pace for 95 scrambles this year if he were to start all 17 games. And the highest since 2006 that I was able to find was Michael Vick in 2006. His last year in Atlanta scrambled 73 times. So he's on pace for over 20 more scrambles than Vick was in his scrambliest season. So, I mean, he's doing all of the things that I said, and his pressure to sack rate is over 20% still. So he's not doing a great job of avoiding sacks when he is pressured and he's scrambling. It's just, you know, he is absolutely nailing those quick throws. The ball placement, the speed with which he is getting it out.
Yeah.
On those quick, that's one I will own. I didn't think he'd get it out. I didn't think he'd process NFL quick game as fast as he has. And he nails the ball placement is incredible. But I think I would have said that in college. He's always an accurate guy from a clean pocket. He just scrambles too much when he's pressured. I still have all those same concerns. I still have sustainability concerns. But yes, the Commanders have built their offense right now around what Jaden Daniels is. They are maximizing his scrambling ability. They are maximizing the quick game. They are taking the design shot plays. They are keeping things simple, and they are going fast.
Yeah, we're getting this in real time, this clash between the two different schools of thought on developing a rookie quarterback. On the one hand, you have the Bears, who are attempting to develop Caleb Williams into what they want him to be. They're not like coming out here and saying, this is your skill set. We're only going to run these plays that you're good at. Instead, they're just like, we are going to build you up until you can run the full NFL offense. You're doing the whole damn thing. you know, and they were going to give it as long as it needed. And it ended up being, you know, about 3.5 games that Caleb needed before he had the whole, the keys to the offense, I guess. Jaden, yeah. They're taking essentially what people wanted us to do with Trubisky, right? Which is only run the plays that are suited to him, only go to the places that are suited to him. We're going to build an offense around this guy, right? Which one of those is going to bear more fruit is going to be extremely interesting to see, because obviously early season, Jaden Daniels is lighting it up right now.
They're like a fucking EPA machine. It's there's no denying the results. The process is still the question mark, and is the process sustainable? And the thing is, my gut instinct is no, it's not sustainable. You cannot possibly scramble 20 times more than the second highest scrambler in NFL history. And I feel confident. Yeah. We only have the data back to 2006, but I feel confident that we are in the scrambliest era the NFL has ever had anyways. So I'm pretty sure if no one before 2006 did it, we can just say all time. You, scrambling more than anyone in the history of the league, that doesn't feel sustainable. At the same time, I don't know, fuck, maybe it is. Maybe he's, because he's doing it so frequently, we've never seen a guy try it this often. Maybe we will be wrong. Maybe it isn't. Maybe for him specifically, it's sustainable. We'll see. I'm fascinated to see how it plays out. I know people probably think I am just like, you know, I'm determined. Jaden must suck, and I will, no matter what, I'll defend my take. And the thing is that, like, if I'm wrong, I'll own it. I joke all the time about that. The reason the spreadsheet exists is because I was wrong on Josh Allen.
And what did we say about Josh Allen? In the 1% chance that he succeeds, it's going to be awesome.
Yeah, like, you know, with Jaden, like, he is an electrifying player. Like, it feels like the guy that I said, you know, people asked me what a best case scenario for him was. I said, I was like, I think he'd be like turbo boost Alex Smith, where it's just like short pass, short pass, short pass, short pass, 1-2 bombs a game, and then scrambles. And right now, that's exactly what he is. It looks like the best version of those Kansas City offenses when Smith was there. Plus, that guy can take off and run for 10 yards pretty much whenever he wants. So it's fascinating to watch. You know, I guess it doesn't feel sustainable, but if it is, well, shit, we will have learned something new about how to win in the NFL. And then, like I said, I would go buy some Jalen Munn, or if Jaden Daniels keeps us up, I would buy all of the Jalen Milroe stock that I can. Because that's, he's right, going to be the next guy that they try this exact same playbook with.
Yeah, no doubt. So. All right, I guess we should get back on track, get back to Caleb. Maybe are we kind of wrapping it up on Caleb? Like, he's been fantastic. I don't know if we've said enough yet.
Yeah, it's been great. The progress specifically against the blitz has been so nice to see, because that was obviously the big problem that they were having weeks 1 and 2. And that's obviously that's going to be the game plan against most rookie quarterbacks, you know, until they prove that they can handle it, is to just blitz the shit out of them. And we've seen that game plan against Justin Fields for 3 years, because, you know, every time he faced a Brian Flores or anyone who was, you know, just a Todd Bowles, just a super blitz happy guy, he always struggled because he was never good at diagnosing the hot, and he was never good at getting rid of the ball quickly. And we've seen Caleb in you know, 4 weeks of football show us a hell of a lot more progress against the blitz than we saw in three years.
If there's Justin fucking Fields. Fire, he knows. All right.
He's got the, and that play specifically. Yeah. Let's talk about that play where, you know, Caleb is, the Bears have a run play called. Caleb is calling out the audible, and Shelton, it feels weird to him because it sounds like Caleb is audibling a run into the slot pressure.
Yeah.
And he's like, we got fucking fire, dude. Why are you going to run right at the blitzing nickelback? What the fuck?
Yeah. Coleman is telling him like, no.
Yeah. And Caleb is like, I know. I got it. And then Caleb does that. And then you see Caleb signal to Rome the quick out. So, you know, Shelton, they're obviously running some kind of RPO concept. So Shelton's expecting that they're going to run. Caleb pulls the run, throws the quick out to Rome. He's got, boom, easy 5 yards there. That's the kind of stuff that, like, we're not used to seeing that around here. It's very encouraging to see from a rookie 5 games into his career.
Yeah, I mean, that they caught that on the hot mic, and I have seen Bears fans latch onto that hard at this point.
Yeah,
that's
a good
name. That is becoming a catchphrase.
Yeah, we got fucking fire, dude. Yeah.
The way he just said, like, He like laughed. The camera's looking at him. He's like, I know. I know. Like, yeah. It's all right. Yeah. And then, yeah, he audibled right into it, got five yards. And I feel like that's a moment for Caleb.
Yeah. There were some good moments on the center mic in the NFL yesterday, because there was also the mic caught Bo Nix trying to call out stuff to the Denver line, and Max Crosby is like, "Speak up, Bo. They don't fucking know."
Yeah.
I love when the mic catches stuff like that. There is so much swearing on an NFL field. It's not a made-for-TV product if the microphones are actually on all the time. So
I wish they had a mic on Bo Nix when he was yelling at Sean Payton on the sideline.
Oh, God, yeah. Wouldn't you? I would love to know what that – yeah, I would love to know what that disagreement was about.
Jesus.
But, yeah, no, I mean, that's – yeah, I think we can wrap up the Caleb portion of the last two games. It's very – you know, and one thing I said before, when we were talking about reasonable expectations for Caleb – before the season, I said, I was like, you know, rookie Kyler Murray is kind of a nice benchmark, I would say, for what I would consider like an I would like him to do a little bit better because he's got a bit better team around him. But at the same time, he's also playing in a less offensive friendly environment than 2019 was when Kyler entered the league. Defenses have kind of got the upper hand right now in a way they didn't 5 years ago. But I said rookie Kyler Murray, I think he ended up with like, he was at like 63%. He had completions. He had 3,700 yards, like 25 touchdowns or something, 12, 13 interceptions. And I went and looked, and through five games, their numbers are almost identical. Caleb's a little bit higher completion percentage, a little bit lower yards per attempt. He's taken a couple less sacks. Kyler had a bit more overall yards because he was throwing the ball a little bit more often, because that Cardinals defense wasn't very good. They were in shootouts every week, or playing catch up every week. But yeah, he's right. You know, a couple rough games early on, but he's right on track now with about the benchmark that I said was what I was hoping for him as a realistic good scenario as a rookie. And then, you know, he could still considerably go up from here. You know, this Jaguars defense that they're going to face on Sunday has been allowing 300 yards per game, and they don't have a lot of, they haven't generated a lot of turnovers. They have a very low pass rush win rate. You'd think this would be another game where the Bears, you know, maybe not quite the explosion that we saw against the Panthers, but it should be another opportunity for them to put up some numbers. Obviously, with the caveat that weird shit happens in London games.
Yeah. The only worse DVOA defense in the NFL right now than the Panthers is the Jaguars. They are number 32. So we have a pretty good shot at it. Want to transition into another guy, but I'm going to get there by talking about something I've been texting you furiously about for the last 2 weeks. In the first half, before that last drive against the Rams, where the Bears really just said, "Caleb, go out there and fucking get it," the Bears had run six runs on first down, three passes on first down in that game. That's not great. 66% runs to 33% pass isn't very balanced. Obviously, you're expecting the run anyway, right? So that kind of plays into the default. It's actually worse than that, because two of those passes were quick, like wide receiver screen types that didn't go anywhere. Essentially run plays for the defense, right? That's because you're just running straight at the line of scrimmage to tackle a guy. So it was more like eight runs, one pass on first down. Very hard to do anything that way. After that, if you take that last drive of the first half of the Rams game, through the rest of that game, completely 50-50, run pass on first down, and the Rams looked flummoxed. They didn't know what the Bears were going to do, didn't know what the Bears were going to do on second down after the first downs. It completely opened the game up. If you look at the Panthers game that the Bears just played, 13 passes on first down, 18 runs on first down, but that counts five runs on first down as the Bears were simply handing it off to end the game. At the end, or not that it was actually five runs on the goal line. Basically, when the Bears kept running the goddamn ball, and then there were all those flags, and they kept trying to hammer Swift into the end zone because they wanted him to get the goddamn touchdown. So if you take those five out that happened on like first and goal on the goal line over and over again, it was almost dead even. 13 pass, 13 runs for the Bears. This has completely opened things up at this point. And what we saw a lot of times, Waldron will go out there And yeah, he'll run the ball on first down three times in a row, and then he'll completely fake out of that exact play, the exact look. We saw the fake toss, which looked like it was going to go for big money during this game, but we also saw the fake trap that he's been running for the first few weeks of the season, and it really threw off the defense. But the same was true on the other side of things. He would have Caleb pass the ball on first down and then do it again and then do it again, and all of a sudden there's a massive run lane open for DeAndre Swift. And that's the guy I kind of wanted to talk about. Over the last 2 weeks, DeAndre has been a lot more decisive. He has also had a lot more opportunity because, shock of all shocks, if the defense doesn't know that you are going to run the ball on first down, you have got a lot more run, a lot more room to run, and those negative 2 to 0 yard runs turn into 4 yard runs. They get you going, and DeAndre has absolutely taken advantage of that. So I gotta give a shout out to DeAndre for playing really well these last two games.
Yeah, he's done a good job. Like, yeah, obviously, I think the coaching point was like, quit dancing, just take what's blocked up, and if there's not any more, go down. And yeah, we said there's a huge difference between 2nd and 7 and 2nd and 11. So like, just you know, if 3 yards is all you can get, 3 yards is all you can get. Speaking of Waldron doing things to set up other things, do you think this is the week that we finally get the play action pass to Doug Kramer? Like, because it's coming. Oh, right? We know it's coming. Like, it's that he has to. Yeah. That's been on. They said Doug in motion.
they ran Mountain with Doug Kramer as the rotating tight end twice in this fucking game, and you know they did that look twice because they are going to, in the future, have him run out front and throw the ball to him for a touchdown. Yeah. It's the only reason you do it that many times.
We call Dougie St. Elmo's fire because he's a man in motion, folks. And that's just
the adaptability of Shane Waldron to the 1 week. He's like, I can't hammer it in for 1 yard, so fuck it. Doug Kramer's my fullback now. Yeah. That's not something we've ever had with an offensive coordinator.
Yeah, it's he did get cute. He did get too cute on 1 4th and 1. I don't like doing, you know, motioning Swift out, and then I get giving the ball to Roshan, but you know, you want Roshan to have a full head of steam, but giving him, you know, when he's only half set back there, like they didn't, you know, Roshan himself said, you know, when you run under center, you know, you got a full head of steam before you're trying to get that 1 yard when don't have enough forward momentum, you can't really get a good push there. So that was the one. Obviously didn't love that play call. I don't really think there should be a 4th and 1. Excuse me. There should be a 4th and 1 where you even really have DeAndre Swift on the field. Like, it's okay to just leave Roshan out there for those as the lone back. But yeah, otherwise, again, a lot of progress from Shane Waldron. And like I said, I talked to early in the year, I talked to on Twitter, you see my at C Mike Spin Movies, big Seahawks fan. He's a big X's and O guy on football Twitter. And he's always been a Shane Waldron defender. And what he said to me, he was like, I don't always think that Shane is the fastest problem solver, but he generally gets to the right answers eventually. Mm-hmm. And I think that's what every week it's gotten a little better. And you see him just be like, all right, well, this personnel groupings, you know, we haven't seen a lot of Gerald Everett. He did do one nice thing. We had a positive Gerald Everett.
Amazing play by Gerald Everett. Like, but you said, DJ Moore cleared the defense out and Gerald Everett was all alone. He put them old man jukes on a guy.
Yeah.
He got that first down. Great play.
Yeah. Which, I mean, that's the role that Gerald Everett should play in this offense, where, you know, it's like, oh shit, we forgot about that guy. Like, that's where, you know, when you're designing touches for Gerald Everett, not so great. But when Gerald Everett is the dump off option because the defense is worried about everybody else, he can do some damage still. Yeah. And, you know, we've seen them incorporate Cole Kmet. And you know, I feel like Caleb and Cole are such a good pairing in the way that Caleb and Justin were not, because, you know, Cole's best trait, and he's gotten better at this every single year, Cole is so good at identifying where to sit down in zone, where the hole is going to be, where to just get there, settle in. He reads the zones really, really well. And Caleb, I think, is getting pretty good at that too. And so he appreciates that Cole reads that, you know, because Caleb and DJ haven't always read things the same way. Caleb and Rome haven't always read him and Kmet seem to generally, you know, Caleb's like, oh, there's going to be a space there. Cole's going to be there. And they've really clicked on that. That pairing is working really well, and kudos to Waldron for, you know, getting Cole out there and using him, even though that's not like his default way. You know, he likes to live in 11 and mostly throw to the wide receivers, but he's adapted to use Cole Kmet here a lot more. But yeah, just general improvements all across the board. And yes, obviously, there is the caveat that, like, the Rams defense, the Panthers defenses are not as the Colts defense last week. Those are not as good as the Texans and Titans early on. But if we were to play the Titans again tomorrow, or the Texans again tomorrow, I think that goes a lot smoother this time. Maybe they still don't win because the Texans defense is very fucking good. I mean, Josh Allen was 9 for 30.
For what it's worth, the Texans have the 4th defense by DVOA right now. The Titans have the 9th.
Yeah, those are two very good defensive units.
Yeah.
And we talked about this. Caleb was 3 batted passes in a Keenan drop from having a pretty good day at the office against Tennessee anyways. You know, Caleb was that close to having like 170 yards, a touchdown, no interception. Everyone would be like, yeah, it was a perfectly fine debut. I said at the time, you know, the batted passes, I thought they were probably kind of a fluke anyways. He's had 1 batted pass in the 4 games since. That's obviously, it was just a weird game, weird shit happened. The Texans game, you know, yeah, it was week 2, his first NFL or his second NFL start against a defense that, again, just fucking embarrassed Josh Allen. He was 9 for 30 for 131 yards. Can you imagine if Caleb had been 9 for 30 against the Texans in that game?
Oh, yeah.
There would have been mass suicides. So that was Josh Allen. So, you know, God, we tried to tell people, just like have some perspective. Take a longer view.
Please take a deep breath.
I'd like to think to myself, like, I've done enough research on quarterback development and historical trends, and like, when is the time to start worrying about a guy, that I would hope everyone would believe me when I'd be like, 2 fucking games is not that high.
Yeah.
3 games was it? 4 games was it? So, you know, and you see the trend line going up. They have the Jaguars coming up, and this should be another game where they can put some stuff on the board.
Yeah, there was. We're going to move on to the defense here in a bit because we got a lot of dudes to shout out on this defense.
Absolutely.
But
yeah,
there was a moment where I really thought beyond that we got fucking fire moment with Caleb, where I thought, oh, he's got this team. Like, this team is in Caleb's pocket. They believe in this guy. There was a play that the Bears have run about once a game at least. It's a play action pass. Caleb rolls out to the right. Cole Kmet is coming from the far side of the field towards Caleb, and Cole is the primary option. Usually DJ is behind him about 10 yards down the field. And Cole, you could tell he's like, oh, I'm open. And he kind of lifts his hand, and Caleb doesn't throw him the ball. And immediately Cole goes, I'm not open. And he just turns and looks ahead of him to see the corner where he was about to get. If he had thrown the ball, Cole would have been murdered. It would have been a hospital ball. And he immediately runs and blocks that guy for Caleb, and Caleb gets 5 yards out of it. It was just this instant, like, I trust this guy. Like, nope, I'm not open. If he's not throwing me the ball, I'm not open right now. It doesn't matter what I think. Instantly turned into a block. And I was like, holy shit. Like, we haven't had a quarterback this team believes in like that.
And Caleb has been, he's been so smart, because yesterday was the first game that I really felt like he did quite a few of the Caleb Williams college, you know, his time to throw yesterday was over 3 seconds for the first time in any of the 5 games. But I mean, that's fine. Like, that's fine because he had protection and he knew he had protection.
Yeah.
And then he extended the play. He only took 1 sack and he extended the play on a couple of those really long scrambles, you know, that he has. And he's capable of doing that. Was the first game where I really felt like he felt comfortable, where I think he was comfortable enough in everything that was going on that he also felt comfortable being himself, because I think he had put such an emphasis those first 4 games on, like, I have to show these people that I can play from the pocket, that I can be all the thing that people who didn't really watch his USC tape said he couldn't be. You know, and so yesterday he was feeling himself a little bit. He has trust in his production a little bit. You saw him extending plays and not just trying to throw the ball away like he was, you know, and he wasn't sacked on any of those scrambles. He felt the pressure appropriately. He knew when he did have to get rid of it, but he picked up some positive yardage on a couple scrambles. He made 1 nice throw that got pulled, but called back from a penalty on one of those scrambles. So yeah, you're really starting to see him, you know, start to expand and give you the whole Caleb Williams experience now.
Yeah. It's been tremendously exciting. We have to move on. We have to talk about the defense.
We
have to start with my boy Jervon Dexter, goddammit.
Yeah, we... Okay, so we probably, again, weird spot for us, probably the most positive Bears podcast or whatever entering this season on Jervon Dexter. We were both pretty high on the guy after what he showed. I didn't expect half of what he's done this year.
He's a beast. So far,
he is a fucking menace.
Yeah.
You can't block him one-on-one. You can't do it. Like, you saw, so Carolina is probably the best.
Right, the Carolina's Panthers tried, and then they stopped trying.
Carolina is probably the best offensive line that the Bears have faced that year. This year. They were not allowing a lot of pressure through the first four games. What pressure they had allowed was mostly Bryce Young inflicting pressure on himself. Mm-hmm. But, you know, they're specifically the interior of their offensive line. I think they were, like, the best in the NFL with the center and guard. The center and the two guards allowing the least amount of pressures on the interior. So I was interested in seeing how this defensive line played because they've been better than expected, but at the same time, the Titans offensive line was nothing to write home about. The Texans offensive line still been having some issues, was really having some issues in week two, had some guys out. You know, the Colts offensive line was very good. They did do some good things against the Colts, but that was probably their weakest game so far. The Rams offensive line is a mash unit. So like not to take anything away from the defensive line, but I think we all wanted to see them really put up some stats against, you know, a better offensive line. And that Panthers interior line is very highly paid for a reason. Those guys were brought in for a reason. They've been good through four games. And Trevon and Billings just fucking ate their lunch. Just beat them up and took their lunch money. It wasn't even close. And Andy Dalton, as we know, is a guy who's very good at getting rid of the ball quickly to avoid pressure. And he's still... They still got to him several times before he even had time to get rid of the ball. I mean, I wish I'd taken a picture of the screen at the time when Dalton was, I think, 7 for 8 for 8 yards. And I was like, that is the most, that's the most Andy Dalton has ever Andy Dalton that happened. But yeah, I mean, he was just, Jervon was everywhere. He's been a fucking monster. He's still, you know, he's still not the best run defender, which is kind of weird. If you'd asked me coming out of college what I thought he'd do better early on, I would have said I think he'll be very good against the run and have to develop pass rush as he goes along, and it's actually been the opposite. But God, he's unblockable with one guy. You have to double team him, which again, if you have to double team him, what are you going to fucking do about Andrew Billings, who's 360 pounds and having the season of his life? And if you're going to double team both of them, congratulations, you have Montez Sweat alone on an island, and you have Daryl Taylor, who, you know, like I said, he's kind of a one trick pony, but it's a hell of a trick. If he knows you've only got one guy on him and he knows your tackle doesn't have outside help and he can just fucking spin around the side of your guy, he's faster than your guy.
Yeah.
So we've seen Daryl just, you know, he's, like I said, one trick pony, but it's a hell of a trick right there. So it's the combination's working so well right now. There's not easy answers for blocking up this Bears front.
Yeah, I mean, what we saw the first four games of this season were other teams kind of respecting Jervon. I think, like, whether they saw in the preseason or they heard from the Bengals or they had heard from the grapevine, through the grapevine, it was like, double Jervon Dexter, do not leave this guy alone. And he was still getting sacks. And I feel like the Panthers thought, we got guys, we got guards, we have a really good offensive line. We're gonna make him prove it. You know? Yeah. And I understand that, but it took one quarter for him to be like, We are not double team him again.
Yeah,
please. And then you saw Andrew Billings going one-on-one and just devastating them.
Yeah. Dave Canales, I can understand. I totally understood what Dave Canales was thinking. Yeah. Like, he's like, I got these two highly paid guards. They've played really well through four games. You know, and I've got Andy Dalton, the guy that gets rid of the ball really fast. We don't have to double team this guy. We're just going to trust our infrastructure there. Yeah. And in one quarter, it was like, never mind, our infrastructure is on fire.
Yeah, we're going back. I am so sorry.
We do not have the infrastructure here. Mistakes were made. But
for a three tech to be here in year two is extremely abnormal. He is on the final step of three technique development, which is get good at beating double teams. If you can get there, you're moving into that conversation as like a top five defensive tackle in the NFL. You're getting paid a lot of money if you can beat those double teams consistently. That's where he's at. That's all he needs.
Yeah, and Bears fans, you know, they're always comparing him to Jalen Carter, and right now he's kind of got the better counting stats than Jalen Carter. I'd be honest with you, I think you guys are underrating Jalen Carter. Jalen Carter gets a lot of attention too, and he's been he basically single-handedly destroyed the Saints offense in that Eagles Saints game. even though he didn't really record. I don't think he recorded a sack. But if you watch the game, he was – Jalen Carter is very good. Jervon Dexter doesn't have to be better than Jalen Carter, but you can sure say right now that the Darnell Wright, Jalen Carter package is a better thing for the Bears to have than just the Jalen Carter package, which is the option that they had if they'd stayed put there. Yeah. And then, God, who knows? You know, we talked about the second-round tackles in that draft. None of them have been very good.
A couple of the first-round ones haven't been doing so well.
Oh, God, no. Broderick Jones, we did talk about this when we were rating that tackle class, how he was, you know, he had so much talent, but he was easily the least experienced of those guys. And, and you know, we said, like, I don't know that he knows what to do with his hands. And, I mean, yeah, he
hasn't figured it out yet.
Yeah.
Poor Steelers fans having to watch that.
Yeah, so, but yeah, no, the Jervon's been great. Billings has been great. Sweat, I think people are disappointed in the lack of sacks right now for Sweat, but he's affecting the game on every
He's affecting the whole game, yep.
Yeah, it's, yeah, I'm not disappointed in Montez Sweat at all. And Daryl Taylor, again, yeah, he's been put in very favorable situations because Daryl Taylor, you know, like I said, he's in situations where he knows the other guys are basically being double teamed, and if there's a chip, it's going on Montez's side. So he knows all I got to do is beat my man to the outside, and he's very good at that. Yeah. And so it's really working there. And like I said, I wanted to see it against that offensive line because that's been a good offensive line up until now. So if they were able to do that against that offensive line, I don't think there are too many offensive lines on the schedule where they shouldn't be able to get some push. Which is good because this is a very good secondary. And speaking of, Jaquan Brisker has had two of the best games of his career,
yeah.
Which is why it's so disappointing to find out that, unfortunately, I believe the hit where he freaking killed Tommy Trumbull,
where he murdered a man,
may also rang his own bell, and he's concussed and he's not expected to play in this game again, or he's not going to travel to London for the game against the Jaguars. Might not see him again. For a bit, so hopefully he gets better quickly. But yeah, Brisker, best two game stretch of his career easily. I think it was all over the place against the Rams. Kyler Gordon, like, he single-handedly, you know, Jervon Dexter and Kyler Gordon, those two players kind of single-handedly destroyed the game plan that Dave Canales had early on in that game, because Jervon blew through their attempts to single block him, got quick pressure, and then those quick passes into the flats, those quick swing passes, those screen passes that Andy Dalton loves to throw, Kyler Gordon was not allowing any yak on those. He was there instantly. Like, he'll let you have the catch, but that's it. And that, you know, Kyler Gordon's been flying all over the place. And Kevin Byard, you know, we haven't really talked about Kevin Byard, and that's for a reason, because in this scheme, that deep safety, usually the less you hear his name, the better. He's a guy that you shouldn't notice most of the time, and that's been good. But and I would say the one time we have noticed him was just an absolutely fantastic interception yesterday. So, like, yeah, that's the way to get yourself noticed, Kevin. And so
he had one more play, and I shouted it out to you when we were watching the game, where he shut down an entire pass scheme by himself. A wide receiver was rolling out to the right. Dalton was coming out to the right side. Byard immediately recognized the play, and as it was happening, I was like, oh my God, Byard is going to stop this whole play himself. He slowly fades back to cover that guy who is fading behind him, and then before Dalton even decides that he's actually going to have to throw it to the guy who is in front of him, to his short option, Byard is already sprinting at that guy, the running back coming out of the flat, and as the ball meets him, he gets the tackle immediately. And I was like, you don't notice Kevin Byard during the game, but when I do, it's like, thank God we have this guy. This is probably, like, right now, this is the best safety duo we've had since that magical Eddie Jackson, ha-ha Clinton Dix year, where everything kind of worked for some reason, and then ha-ha just had to retire immediately the next year, randomly.
Yeah, I would say it's the best pairing right now since Eddie and Adrian Amos had their last year together. But yeah, it was, you can tell he's the veteran leader there. He handles a lot of the communication in that secondary, and those guys do such a good job with their coverage responsibilities and communicating and passing guys off. That's a huge part of it too. I guess specifically, we should also shout out how, for narrative purposes, how utterly cathartic that game was for the Bears-Panthers trade, because everybody had their freaking moment. Obviously, Caleb Williams, the guy that the Panthers could have had if they just kept their own draft pick instead of trading it for Bryce Young, threw the ball over the yard. DJ Moore, revenge game, went off without a hitch. Yeah. Tyreek Stevenson had a beautiful pass deflected there, just like came in out of nowhere, batted that ball out of the way. That was beautiful to see. Darnell Wright had a good game. What other?
And our second round pick is still sitting pretty because we beat the Panthers.
Yeah. So, and then of course, and they got Bryce Young in there for garbage time, and he did make one nice throw. He made one really nice throw on the move,
which it's just not something that's in his bag. He then, of course, tried to throw an interception two separate times, but
yeah, no, I mean, but it's little things with Bryce. It's all about the little things, isn't it? So
yeah, don't kick the little guy when he's down. All right, focus on.
It was very funny, Steven Ruiz of the Ringer, when he was talking about his winners and losers of NFL Week 5, just wrote Panthers fans, and he is a Panthers fan, and he was just like, I had to turn Bears Panthers off because it was just too painful to watch. Yeah. Caleb Williams doing that to my franchise and everything. So, yeah, I mean, we said even before the season that's going down as one of the worst trades in NFL history, but if Caleb stays on the trajectory he's on now, 100% slam dunk. Like,
it's beyond the Bo Jackson trade at that point. Yeah.
Herschel Walker, you mean? Yeah.
God damn it. Herschel Walker. Bo Jackson. What am I talking about? I'm just thinking about Tech Mobile.
Just picked an 80s running back at random. So.
Marcus Allen, the Marcus Allen trade. Yeah. So positivity for the Bears. We've got, it's in London, but we're going up against a truly awful defense here this week. The Jaguars, like I said, they're dead last in the NFL right now in DVOA. You would hope the Bears just kind of keep this train a rolling. Even after that, we've got a bye week, which is great. We're going to get Ryan Bates back. You know, hopefully Brisker gets healthy. Hopefully Zach Pickens gets healthy, and we have a nice rotation.
Yeah, that's interior. That is one thing. That is one weakness that's showing up, and I would especially like to see the Bears have that shored up before they get to that Commanders game, because the Commanders are running the piss out of the ball, and the Bears, they are defending the run just fine with their first unit, but that second unit defensive line, when it rotates in, Byron Cowher and Chris Williams, they are just not up to snuff as terms of defending the run. So they getting Pickens back, hopefully having a little bit more depth at defensive tackle. I would be, at this point, if Poles does make a deadline move, I wonder if it is for more of like a true quality backup nose tackle at this point.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's one weakness we have kind of identified. But yeah, no, that I would think the Bears should win this game against Jacksonville. They should be able to move the ball.
I mean, the defense don't get harder after that either. You know, we're looking at the Commies, and that's going to be a fun game, but not because they can stop us.
Yeah, their defense is...
They have a bad defense.
Despite how Deshaun Watson made them look yesterday, because
he's
currently busy being like the worst.
Yeah, and then Arizona, another bottom eight defense in the league, and then New England, who has, our defensive line against probably Drake May at that point in New England. I feel bad for Drake preemptively, that's a month out, and I already feel the pain in my bones from what Drake is going to go through.
They're considering starting him against the Texans for his first start. And I was like, okay, so you watched Danielle Hunter surgically decapitate Caleb Williams, and you watched them just hold Josh Allen to 9 for 30, which I believe someone pointed out is a stat line that the NFL has not seen since 1992.
Jesus
9 for 30. And you watched them to Josh Allen, and you were like, you know what, Drake? That builds character. And that,
this is
game one,
baby.
You know, I think we talked about this before the season, and I said, like, I'm usually on the side of, if a guy was ruined, he was never going to be great to begin with. You know, you just play these kids. My two caveats there to when you shouldn't play a guy. Number one is if he has mechanical issues that you need time to truly rep and fix, which I think was Jordan Love to an extent. He would have been a disaster if he'd started as a rookie and he needed time to work on his stuff. And as we're seeing this year, he is still... the accuracy comes and goes still. He hasn't quite been the guy we said. The more likely, people didn't want to believe this because it's the Packers and we feel cursed and everyone just assumed that he was going to pick up right where he left off last year. But we said the more likely scenario based on history for most teams and based on other guys who've had similar seasons is that he's going to fall in between the two extremes of last year. And that's what he's doing. A lot of highlights, some lowlights. But, you know, Jordan Love is a guy that mechanically I would have said shouldn't start right away. And then the other thing I said is if your offensive line is so bad, not just regular NFL bad, but just unplayably terrible, like the Tim Couch Browns or the David Carr Texans, you should just sit the guy. And I think that's the Patriots' offensive line right now. Yeah. I do not have the warm fuzzies about running Drake May out there against the Patriots.
Yeah, it's insane that, you know, as bad as the Bears' offensive line has been against the pass, and they were very good here against the Panthers. We didn't talk about that because the Panthers' defensive line is the worst in the NFL. There shouldn't be a threat from that. But yeah, I like the Patriots have been twice as bad, which seems impossible, but their offensive line has been twice as bad as the Bears at giving up pressures. You can't throw Drake into that, not against Houston. Like, why didn't you start him first against Miami? Just visions of Justin against the Browns, right? Like, yeah. Just like, why are you sacrificing him to the best unit in the NFL to start his career? But yeah, Tim Couch and the younger Carr, the older Carr, are absolutely the things I think of when I think of, like, yeah, you just sent him out there to get hit and rattled, and now he's going to hear footsteps for his entire career. So I would implore Gerard Mayo not to do that. But Lord knows what Belichick would do and has instilled in Gerard Mayo. Maybe this is a trial by fire kind of thing, huh?
Yeah. Yeah. You can picture Belichick being like, oh, if he dies, he dies. You know?
Exactly. So. All right.
But
well.
Yeah. No, I think Bears should, you know, obviously it would be a deflating loss if it happens, but I always try to bear in mind. I do think Trevor Lawrence, for the most part, is more talented than what he's shown this year. And I do think London weirdness happens. But yes, should be another Bears win. Should be another good offensive game for the Bears to look forward to. But yeah, it's been great to talk about two big Bears wins. And I'm hoping everybody who listened to our last episode was like, please, God, let the optimism that they have shown bear fruit. Like, it's there's a little bit of fruit happening, guys. We're a little fruity right now. So
that's right. We,
you know,
we have the fruitiest podcast on the internet.
Absolutely.
Right here.
Check out the dark bear web. So
Google the dark bear web,
on the dark bear web
and listen to the fruitiest podcast on the internet. All right. See you in a week. Way out on that bumper's road. Now you know I'm leaving Chicago, and people I sure do hate to go. Now you know I'm leaving. Yeah.